Now, for a long time, Irish food carried a bit of a reputation problem. Overcooked vegetables, beige plates, low expectations overall. And then, quietly, almost without some of us noticing, something changed. And Irish restaurants didn't just improve, they got confident, more creative and internationally respected. And today, Ireland is home to dozens of Michelin-listed restaurants and a food culture that chefs and critics now take very seriously. So when did Irish restaurants get properly good? It's News Talk Daily. I'm Sean Defoe. And today we are heading out for dinner. We've earned that slap-up meal in the crazy run-in to Christmas. Joining me at the restaurant table today is the chef, food historian and lecturer at TU Dublin, Máirtín McInumra. Máirtín's also the co-editor of Irish Food History, A Companion, which is an award-winning deep dive into how Ireland eats, cooks and thinks about food. You're very welcome to News Talk Daily. So before we get into sort of the Irish food scene, we might talk about the book just for a minute, because there was one story that caught my eye about sort of Guinness Wars back in the olden days, in the days of Churchill. You might explain that and the Irish ministers barring the export of Guinness to the north.
Yeah, well, this I suppose this was part of the economic war as such, you know, when De Valera got into control right around 32 or so, and there was particularly around the time of what we call the emergency, which was the Second World War. They were threatening various Irish goods, that we were beef and all that sort of stuff that we were importing into England. You know what I mean? But anyway, they hit them where it hurt. You know what I mean? They says, listen, it says, you know they say an army marches on its stomach, but maybe it marches on its drink as well, as they say. So they said they were going to withhold Guinness. You know what I mean? And then suddenly Churchill changed his mind quite quickly. You know?
The power of Guinness. If we ever doubted it, there you go. Loads more stories like that in the book, which would make a great Christmas present for a lot of people. Look, when we talk about, I suppose, Irish restaurants getting good, I guess I'm often, and I'm sure you are as well, maybe asked by people when you're out in other countries, like say you're in Spain, you're talking about tapas or whatever, like, what is Ireland's food culture? What is Ireland's dish? And sort of beyond bacon and cabbage, a lot of people might struggle to say what it is. What do you say when you're asked what Ireland's food culture is?
Well, I suppose really it's normally around the cow, and the cow in all its manifestations, as normally to do with sort of milk and butter and dairy and cheese, but also beef and that. The cow has been here for over 5,000 years, you know, and, you know, the wealth of Irish people was known, even you go back to Queen Maeve and Táin Bó Chúlainne, you know what I mean? All of that big battle and between the men of Ulster and the men of Connacht, all big, you know, fell over a bull, you know, because actually cattle were the sign of wealth, you know, is how your wealth was measured. And even things as simple as the word bóthar for road, like the word bóthar comes from the word bow, as in cow, because a bóthar had to be big enough for two cows to be able to pass each other, or a cow to turn around. And even the simple things like buachal and callin, you know, the Irish for boy and girl. Buachal, the bua part, comes from bow, and chuil means a herder. So basically, you're a cow herder, a cowboys. You know what I mean? All the boys are cowboys. And then callin, cal is that chal, but with the if at the n at the end of it, which basically means little herder. So, you know, it's all of these things are actually, all our history is actually hidden in our place names and our language and our linguistically. So we really have a very, very deep history if you only look closely enough, you know?
Yeah, wow, I never knew any of that. That's fascinating to know the history of it. So when we're talking, so we've had that history going back sort of time immemorial, like you say. But I don't think Ireland would have been widely considered as having a brilliant restaurant scene. That's kind of changed in the last few years. What brought around that revolution?
Yeah, well, there's been a few changes. Like I back in 2009, I did a PhD on the history of Dublin restaurants. And I remember the two external examiners I had, you know, an anthropologist and a historian, and particularly one who had done a lot of work on the Ireland in the 1950s, was actually quite taken aback to find out from my research that in the 1950s, Dublin had two of the best restaurants in the world. you know, Jamais restaurant and the restaurant Russell, which was in the Russell Hotel. So we have actually historically had, at various periods of time, we have been world leaders, but then that naturally did drop and fall. So, for example, the Russell restaurant that I mentioned there in the 1950s, that actually closed in 1974. And actually, 1974 is the first year that the Michelin Guide covered Great Britain and Ireland. Mm-hmm. And the Michelin, you know, the Russell, which closed that year, actually did get a star. And the other place in Ireland that got a star was Arbutus Lodge down in Cork. And the lads in Arbutus Lodge had actually worked and trained in the Russell Hotel, but they'd also worked in the Trogrow restaurant and with Paul Bocuse over in France. So I think, you know, one of the secrets that have been happening, I suppose, for the, for any good food and any, and not just any good food, anything to rise to a standard of high performance, whether it's sport or whether it's music or whether it's everything, you know, you need to get exposure, you need to work with the best, and you need to, you know, open up to other ideas. And that has been happening, I suppose you could say that's been happening since the 60s, 70s, all the way through. But you're right, you know, there was a moment then, like in from say around 1974, it would take another 15 years or 12 years before Dublin would get another Michelin star. There was this sort of lull there, you know, and what happened is a lot of the restaurants around Dublin, they moved out of the city centre and they moved into the suburbs. And, you know, you had places like, you know, the King Citric out in Holt, and you had, you know, all of these, you know, the Cockardie and these sort of places, which were sort of the fancy places until Guy Beau's opened up in the 80s, you know. But like, there, I think one of the real things that has driven where we are at the moment, like we are at an amazing moment here with Irish food, but not just with Irish food. We're here. We have a new confidence in ourselves as a country and a new confidence in ourselves as a people. So no matter what we're doing, like whether it's with film or with music or with art or business and food as part of that, is that we have this new confidence and competence, because it's not just confidence, it's backed up by competence. And I've been thinking about this, and I think a lot of it stems back. I could stem it back to, it's funny now that the Irish team of, you know, when we haven't qualified for the World Cup yet, but actually I think a lot of actually our self-confidence actually stems back from Euro 1998 and then the World Cup in 1990. And also, as I say, the end of the Troubles.
Yeah.
Because as I say, you know, when the Troubles were going on for so long, you know, all you were hearing about Ireland was bombs and, you know, blowing up this and that, you know, and death and misery, you know. And not just that, but actually part of the Troubles as well is that the Irish flag had been sort of taken away from us, you know, because it was, I suppose, was weaponized.
Yeah.
And, the, you know, when we suddenly, the soccer team started to do well in 88 and 90, we suddenly were able to wave the tricolour again, sort of with pride and without any sort of connotations of sectarianism, which was liberating. But I think really, you could say that the beginning of the Celtic Tiger, you know, 1994 really is when it all kicks off, when food changes, when restaurants, we're going to restaurants change, because like we used to go, historically, we used to go to a restaurant when we were maybe celebrating, you know. The first time I was brought to a restaurant is my sister got her junior cert or her inter cert, right, or whatever it was at the time. You know, results. So my parents brought the three eldest kids out to say, listen, this was a sign that if you do well in school, you'll be rewarded with a meal. You know what I mean? Like, you know, from, say, the 1990s, dining out became sort of, it became a pastime. You know, instead of going to the pub, you know, to meet your friends, you'd go for dinner with them. You know what I mean? Mm. And so we started then, you know, going out, if not once a week, once a fortnight, or definitely once a month, you know. And then there was the whole idea about chasing to try and, you know, see what was happening and, oh, have you tried this place or have you tried that place? And your knowledge about food and wine was part of your sort of, you could say, your cultural capital. You know what I mean? It was a signifier of that you were sort of smart and erudite and well-travelled and knew your stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Doing well for yourself in general. So if that was the sort of pickup of it then, and in the boom times and kind of, like you say, confidence times, arts are going well, Ireland's well into internationally, economically, all of that. Did it also have a tail off when the crash came, you know, sort of 08 onwards and is picking up again now, or did it buck that particular trend?
Yeah, in the food wise, it was curious because actually it's like, you know, the, as I said, the economy fell off a cliff, but actually the restaurants did well because what happened is that the restaurateurs and the chefs sort of cut their cloth to measure and started, you know, used the fact that people had less money and all that sort of stuff to actually be more creative, to try and do more with less, you know, to use lesser, you know, lesser known or lesser valued cuts of meat, or to use you vegetables, you know, in exciting ways, et cetera, you know?
Yeah.
So it, like, there was a boom, like, as in, you know, during those, I said, during those bust years, there was a rise in, let's say, these sort of Michelin starred and Michelin, you know, Bib Gourmand restaurants, you know. But also, suppose what happened, and this happens, and you see this happening in these cycles as well, is that because of the bust, that there was rents dropped and there was opportunities then for young aspiring chefs and restaurateurs to maybe open up, whereas maybe they couldn't have afforded to open up during the boom of the Celtic Tiger. Do you know
right,
what I mean?
That's so interesting, yeah.
As I say, for every place that closes, there's always an opportunity for someone else to come in and to start, you know, yeah.
So you said, obviously, the history of Irish food is tied up in the cow, but obviously vegetables, in bad times, you've mentioned them there, but also just more vegetarians, more vegans, the climate aspect of it, something people are thinking about. And I think we associate Irish vegetables with overly boiled, kind of tasteless, sort of fall apart. But has there been a bit of a revolution there? I know you've got restaurants like Gloss here only a couple of streets away from us in News Talk that focus heavy on it. Have chefs picked that up as well, or is it still very much meat is king?
No, I think chefs have picked that up. And like, sure, it used to be, you know, it used to be if you went into a restaurant and if you were a vegetarian or if you're vegan, like, you'd end up, you'd want a love risotto. Do you know what I mean? Because you were, you know, you were getting it every time sort of thing. But, you know, like, when you think about, you know, the amount of places, like, I'm thinking about places like, say, M&L, the Szechuan restaurant there, Cathedral Place, or actually even I was in Hakahan up in Stonybatter, another sort of Szechuan restaurant. But like one of the standout dishes there is the green beans. Do you know what I mean? You go to a lot of other places and, you know, the standout dishes could be the roast cauliflower. Or I remember like going to, oh Christ, Library Street. Like, geez, one of the most memorable dishes in Library Street for me now would have been the Hispy cabbage. Do you know? So, like, I think, I suppose, kicking some of this off might have been Dennis Cotter down in Cafe Paradiso, you know, because, like, that was the first vegetarian restaurant I went to and you completely forgot it was vegetarian because, right, like, just the food was just so amazing and so interesting and so creative that you forgot that it was a vegetarian restaurant, you know?
Yeah, when it's done right, I suppose. When it comes to, and I probably should have even asked this at the start, when they're giving out Michelin stars, how does it actually work? Do they need to apply to come and be inspected? They're obviously not going to every restaurant in the country. So how do you go about getting one?
Yeah, well, you don't apply as such, but that said, people can nominate you, as in, you know, the general customer can fill out a form on the Michelin site and can recommend that inspectors go see and visit a place. But normally the inspectors are keeping their ear to the ground, you know, checking restaurant reviews, you know, they know what's happening. They look at the local press and stuff like that to see, you know, who's moving and shaking and that sort of stuff. And they normally come and tease it out. And you could say that one of the complaints over the last number of years is that historically very few, there was maybe only two or three who used to come to Ireland and they only came maybe twice a year. So they really didn't have their finger on the pulse. And then they were slower then to award because, like, I have been cooking and eating and teaching for nearly 30 years now, you know, and I've eaten in some, you know, Michelin-starred restaurants all over the world, you know, some in London, some in Paris, and some of them, like some of the places that didn't even have a Bib Gourmand or anything in Dublin and in Ireland, like would knock the socks off them completely, you know. And you know, a lot of them have been rewarded since, but there's still a good few out there that I think, you know, definitely deserve a star, you know. Yeah.
And with the Dublin hosting the Michelin ceremony for the UK and Ireland, that's coming up in February and the first time it's done so. So how big a deal is that in terms of putting Ireland more on the map and those restaurants that you're talking about that maybe deserve but haven't got there?
No, it's a huge thing, you know what I mean? And I'm curious to see whether it will coincide with some, you know, more news. Like I'd be surprised if we don't get at least maybe three new Michelin stars at this ceremony. And I suppose one of the interesting things is to figure out whether we'd actually get our first three star, you know what I mean? I'm not sure if that's going to happen, but if it, you know, I suppose if there was ever a time for it to happen, it seems the opportune time for it to happen, you know. And then if that is going to happen, who the hell is going to get it? Like, you know what I mean? If I had to put money, I would say that would probably be chapter one. But I don't think it's going to be Gibbo's, because they've been on the go now for around, you know, with the two stars for around 25 years or more. But you never know. You never know, you know.
Right, there we go. I'll go down to the bookies now and blame you if it's wrong after all of this. So while we've seen this revival, and you mentioned people opening up in sort of the bust when it was cheaper, like trading conditions, hugely difficult the last few years, don't look like they're going to get a whole pile better. Economy, particularly housing and getting, you know, commercial property is a big difficulty in and around Dublin. Is that having an impact for the negative as much as there are other positives out there?
Yeah, it of course it is, but at the same time, you know, it seems to be that regardless of what the cost is, people still want to, you know, they have their dream and they want to open up a place. And but there's, you know, there's I suppose there's a savvier generation coming up now. Just I've been teaching for say 25 years in 1999. In Cahill Brewer Street, we set up the first ever degree in culinary arts. And like, this was a landmark moment because it was the first time that actually chefs were actually getting there. We melded what was traditionally a vocational education along with a liberal arts education, and which meant that the students over a 4-year period of time would get the best, you know, technical education, but also would learn about the history, also learn about business, also learn about art, also learn about literature, all that sort of stuff, sociology, etc. But I remember talking to people like Keelan Higgs, you know, who has Variety Jones now and has one Michelin star. You know, he would have done the program, and he was saying, you know, he says that when he was doing the program, the last thing he wanted to be doing was a business plan. But suddenly, when he was opening up his own restaurant, he was thankful that he had done a business plan in college. You know what I mean? I'm looking at the likes of, say, other graduates who were in the news recently, like Mark Moriarty, who's at Charlotte and Shane from Scale Bakery. You know, they've all come through the program as well. And they're all have their business caps on. They're not just, you know, highly talented technically, but they're also good business people, and they weigh up their options before opening a place. I'm thinking of Kuan Green, you know, who's opening up almost down in Abbey Leagues with the Stripe brothers as such. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I wouldn't be surprised if that would get two stars when it opens, that it goes straight to two stars. You know what I mean?
Okay.
But these guys, you know, these guys are not just flashing the pan. You know, these guys have, you know, they've accountants, they've done business plans, they've figured it out. Do you know what I mean? So hopefully it all works well for them, you know what I mean? And that, but it is exciting times, you know. It is exciting times.
Absolutely. Completely exciting times. And look, a lot of those people, I think Scale and Mark Moriarty both have books out this Christmas. Your own book is there, Irish Food History, A Companion, published by the Royal Irish Academy, and will make a lovely Christmas present for the foodie in your life if you're still looking at this stage. Martin McInerney, thanks so much for joining us on News Talk Daily.
Balta.
That's it from News Talk Daily for today. If you have any comments or feedback or anything else you just want to say to us, you're always welcome. Send us an email, newstalkdaily@newstalk.com. Until tomorrow, same time, same place. Talk to you then.